Menards is the ultimate home improvement destination in the Midwest. Since 1958, we've been supplying you with everything from hardware to automotive needs. We believe in helping you save big money on every project, big or small. From top-of-the-line tools to plumbing supplies, paint, and appliances, we've got you covered. We thank you for making Menards a part of your year. From our family to yours, have a safe and happy new year.
Save big money at Menards.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of The Dark Hustle. Thank you so much for listening to my podcast and subscribing and following us. It's super cool. You guys are the best. Also, if you are not a member of our Patreon, what are you doing? Go check it out. It's got multiple levels to choose from, and we have early access over there for all of our episodes and a bunch of other stuff. So go check us out on Patreon.
Hello.
Hey, is this Tim?
It is.
All right. Well, let me just kind of get a little backstory on you. I mean, I'm ready if you're ready.
Go ahead. Okay. Ask away.
Oh, Lord. So, were you born and raised in Texas?
No, I was born in Farmington, New Mexico. And a couple years later, maybe two, three, we moved to Houston in the 60s. And I've grown up on the Gulf Coast ever since then.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yep. Lived in Texas. Yeah, well, I've not moved anywhere other than for work.
Yeah.
You know, I've been to your state and worked up there for 3 months, couple years back. I did a project around Greensboro.
Oh, yeah.
And I've worked in Alaska, so, you know, that was, it's all been rotational work. So I've been to 4 different continents, been, all of it's oil field, worked in Alaska, been to Africa, Asia, Europe. I've been all over the place.
Oh, wow. That's pretty cool, though. And then, yeah. Well, from what I take it, we spoke a little bit because I've done some merch for you. You do transport, correct?
Right. It's horse hauling or horse transportation, or some even say horse hot shot.
Yeah. And you've been doing that for a while.
Well, really, you know, since I've owned and worked and shown horses since 1993, that's a long time. So just got, you know, pulling a trailer with horses was second nature. So during the pandemic, I needed the extra income, you know, like everybody else needing to make money. So that I tried it for a little bit, and it was kind of hit or miss. But then a local lady out of the Houston area that was doing it basically for her livelihood, had called me up out of the blue and needed help hauling horses, so she tossed some of her clients my way, and we just took off from there. And man, now it's pretty good deal. I've been making decent money at it. It kind of fills the gaps when needed. I'll do the long distance trips, and the girlfriend does a lot of the local trips more so than I do, because I've got a day job, so
right.
I can squeeze in something over the weekends. Yeah, like I just went to Florida last week, and that was a really long haul from basically my barn to the client's barn. Oh, just say Alvin, Texas to Tampa Bay, Florida, or St. Petersburg, and turn around and come back home the next day. Those, I've done a few of those. Colorado, New Mexico, El Paso to Corpus, San Antonio, Houston, just real long distance hauls, Oklahoma, Arkansas, kind of just specialize in the South, Southwest.
Right.
But,
yeah, that's a kind of a, that's, I mean, you have to allot for a couple of days to do that. Like, what's in total hours that took?
Oh, my gosh. I would say I left my house Friday morning, or I'm sorry, Saturday morning at 4:30 and was back home Sunday around almost 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night.
Oh, wow. Somewhere holy there. Cow.
Yeah. And I did spend the night in a hotel Saturday night, but I bet I probably slept. I did sleep, matter of fact, for 5 hours, and then I got up and come on to the house because I had already taken off work on Monday because I knew I was going to be wiped out and wouldn't be able to go do my regular day job.
Now, they switched. Now, I remember when you could pull a horse trailer without a CDL, like any type of weight. Now they've gotten it to where you have to, I mean, like, it's a little more regulated when it comes to pulling a horse trailer. Like, you can't, do you have to go by the same rules as if you're a truck driver? Like, you can't be called extra hours or anything like that?
You know, there's probably a big debate about that stuff, and I don't really get into it too much. But you don't, you know, you don't tell that to the rodeo cowboys and cowgirls. When they have to go do what they do, somebody's hauling their horses, whether it's them or a friend or somebody like that. But some states, they may regulate it. And I, from what I'm learning, that may be on the Upper East Coast.
Yeah.
But Texas and the other southern states, I'm not aware of anything. And I guess it's go from can to can't. Or whatever you're willing to do within reasonable amount of means, you know, justification or maybe even how much coffee you drink. I'm not sure.
Right, yeah. I know, I mean, I just know they like, they have to regulate truck drivers in that sense, you know.
Yeah, well, yeah, they do. I think, I'm not positive about this, but I think truck drivers can't drive more than 10 hours maybe, or is it 12 or 14? See, I'm not sure.
Yeah,
those
I'm not
are
sure
the
either.
Hours. Yeah.
But I didn't know if you guys were regulated the same type of way because you are still hauling.
To my knowledge, I don't think so.
Gotcha.
And again, that might be state to state.
Right. Right, I'll have to look that up.
Yeah, Pennsylvania is pretty strict, but I'm not going to go this far. I've been asked to haul horses out of Canada and make other loads to Wisconsin. That's just too far to drive. And that Florida drive was, you know, I really kind of took it because it was the a client that I've done a lot of work for. And second, it was all interstate. I mean, I never got off, but really just two roads.
Menards is the ultimate home improvement destination in the Midwest. Since 1958, we've been supplying you with everything from hardware to automotive needs. We believe in helping you save big money on every project, big or small. From top-of-the-line tools to plumbing supplies, paint, and appliances, we've got you covered. We thank you for making Menards a part of your year. From our family to yours, have a safe and happy new year.
Save big money at Menards.
Until I got into town and went to the neighborhood where the barn was. But it was all 19 and I-75. That was easy driving.
Yeah, because you're right. I mean, if it's interstate and highway driving, it's a little different. And let me ask you this. What's probably the most memorable haul that you've done as far as, like, particular horses or livestock or whatever have you? What's one that really kind of just stuck out with you? Any particular thing that happened?
Well, I had a haul that was going to be quite a considerable haul, leave my house. And I actually had the one client bring her horse to my house so that I wouldn't have to go east and then turn around and go northwest. So she was in Winnie, Texas, which is east of Houston, maybe an hour, maybe. Mm-hmm. She brought the horse to me, and I was able to leave at, 5 o'clock in the morning the following day, and I was headed to Austin to pick up another horse, and carry the first horse to Seymour, Texas, carry the second horse to Lubbock, Texas, go to El Paso, and pick up one or two more, and then carry those two down to Corpus Christi, and then go home.
Oh, wow.
That route was long and forever, and I did break through. I'm getting ahead of myself, but when I got to Austin to pick up the second horse, that horse turned out to be a train wreck. And the farrier had told me, you're not going to enjoy this horse. She's not well-mannered or well-behaved. She's kind of a looney tune. And when we went to put her in the trailer, she started tearing up my trailer. I don't guess she was ready for confined space. And then she jumped on the back of the baby that was up in the front, which was a two-year-old going to make its living as a futurity horse for the cutting. So there was no way I could let that mare stay in the trailer with that baby, let alone have the stall next to it in my trailer.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, and I haul by myself, I don't ever have anybody go with me. Nobody's volunteered or wanted to go. It's just me, myself, and I.
Yeah.
And so anyway, I had to make a decision right then and there because I'm up against the clock to get that other horse delivered and then going about my way to go get the other horses that were on my route and schedule. So I kicked the horse out, explained to the lady why I did it, and at that particular time, a few months prior, somebody had made the news, and I believe it was in Louisiana, either it was in Baton Rouge or New Orleans, they'd had a horse make its way out the head window on the trailer and got halfway out of the trailer. And they were on I-10, so it made the news. And the only thing that I thought of was, I don't want to be that guy being on the news and I have all these people see me struggling by myself, drawing a crowd, drawing attention to a horse hanging out of a trailer. What would I have done? I said, this is not going to happen.
Right.
So I politely kicked the horse out of the trailer, refunded the lady half of her money, and she understood why. She was heartbroken, but she understood why, and I just was crystal clear to her, I can't have anything happen while I'm on the road. And I try to go worst case scenario.
Yeah.
So, she started crying, and I just felt bad. I wanted to do the job, but I wasn't willing to gamble with that horse. And create an incident and have an accident and me be responsible for everything. So I don't know if that horse ever got to its destination, which was Lubbock. I think the young lady was going to go start school there, and she was going to be on the drill team. And I just thought to myself, well, you might want to consider another horse. But, oh, my God, that's probably my most memorable road trip to date. And I've been on some doozies, you know, long hauls. But, you know, to leave Alvin and go to Alvin, which is below Houston, and then go to Austin, Seymour, Lubbock. I ended up cutting over to Hobbs, New Mexico, spent the night there, went through the Guadalupe Mountains at daylight, which was fantastic.
Oh, wow.
And then ended up also in those mountain ranges in far west Texas. You know, I've always, you know, oh, the Rocky Mountains, yada, yada, yada. Well, I've been to those too, and I've seen a lot of mountain ranges in my life, but I was really impressed with the Guadalupe Mountains. And I think the one that sticks out the best and was the highest was, I think it's called El Capitan, and it's over 8,000 feet elevation.
Oh, wow. And,
you know, yeah, Denver says we're the mile high city. Well, evidently, they didn't go to the Guadalupe Mountains.
I was fixing to say, you've probably seen some really pretty scenery traveling like that, because if you go, do you have to go to New Mexico more, or do you try to stay, stay in Texas in the lower, like, southeast region?
I don't mind going to New Mexico. It's okay, but like that Route 66, but New Mexico roads are not the finest.
Right,
and,
okay.
I'd have to say, this past trip, last week, or the week before last, where I went to Florida, I was very impressed with the interstates in Florida. They were bump-free, smooth as ice, clean, well-lit. It looked like the roads had just been pressure-washed and freshly painted, and the roadside parks for taking a nap going to the bathroom. They had well-kept bathrooms, well-kept grounds. They had security on there. They had attendants in there.
You've always, nice.
You've heard of Bucky's, right?
Yeah.
The convenience store that's famous for all the super clean restrooms. Well, Florida had the super cleanest restrooms for a roadside park that I've ever been in my life.
Oh, wow.
And the fact that you had signs up on the highway with neon lights, or not neon, but LED lighting that tell you how far to the next highway. And I was just impressed. I was very impressed. They had road rangers, they called them. Guys driving around in trucks that had spare tires. Gas,
really?
Diesel. Oh, yeah, and they had a phone number you called if you...
Menards is the ultimate home improvement destination in the Midwest. Since 1958, we've been supplying you with everything from hardware to automotive needs. We believe in helping you save big money on every project, big or small. From top-of-the-line tools to plumbing supplies, paint, and appliances, we've got you covered. We thank you for making Menards a part of your year. From our family to yours, have a safe and happy new year.
Save big money at Menards.
We're in a situation on the side of the highway, and one would get dispatched to Florida. For me, on a scale of 1 to 10, got a 10 on the road.
It sounds like it, like Florida, because I haven't done a whole lot. You've obviously done a lot more traveling than I ever have, but I used to have to go to Georgia a lot, and I'd go through South Carolina, and I swear to God, every time I'd hit that South Carolina line, I would absolutely hate it. It was like South Carolina made it a point to be the worst state ever of roads, period.
No, I've been there, and I'll tell you who has the worst roads ever is Louisiana.
Really? I've never been there, but I believe you.
Louisiana has the worst roads you could ever think of. I lose hubcaps off my truck every time I go. And
Louisiana's got how many of your hubcaps at this point?
Probably a full set.
Jesus Christ.
That's off of my dually. So they're not cheap to replace, and I just bought a full set here a couple of weeks ago. And on this trip to Florida, I lost one. Well, I know where it went. It went off the I-10 in Louisiana. It dang sure didn't come off in Florida.
Well,
or Mississippi or Alabama.
It's funny you bring this up. It's not funny. I know how it feels to lose stuff, trust me. But it's funny because it's like if you do look at the states, it's like you think there would be some type of like a standard set for the roads, but they are even like just, you know, you're in South Carolina by looking at the road. You ain't even got to look at the sign. You know, once you see that crappy, like it's just crappy roads. It's crap all together. You're like, yep, I know where I'm at now.
Well, I worked offshore in the oil industry offshore for 20 years. And
near Texas?
Huh?
What shore did you work off of?
Well, I worked offshore Texas and Louisiana. I was in production and drilling. And Louisiana had the worst roads.
Huh.
And I got to jacking with people. If they wanted me to go fetch a horse in Louisiana or take one to Louisiana, I said, well, I'm going to charge another $100. Well, why do you want to do that? It's already expensive as it is. I said, because I'm going to lose hubcaps.
I don't blame you one bit.
You know, I'm going to charge somebody to replace those hubcaps.
Yeah.
And I mean to tell you, the minute you break that Texas line and go east of the Sabine River, you better count on losing something.
That's wild how it changes like that, ain't it?
Oh, it's pathetic. Yeah, it's, and look, Texas has got some decent roads, but they have got to step it up to get up to Florida's standard.
And yeah, I guess make me want to go to Florida now. Like, I want to go to Florida just to see the roads because it sounds really nice. That's better than North Carolina, for sure.
There wasn't even a street light that wasn't burning. Oh, I mean, these guys... There wasn't even dead animals on the road. There was no garbage on the road. Every once in a while you'd see some tire rubber where somebody slung a tire, but that wasn't even enough to worry about. I was that impressed with Florida roads. I thought,
now let me ask you this. You said, I want to go back to how you worked. You said you worked offshore on a drilling rig. You actually worked in the ocean, like in the ones that you see in movies and things like those types of rigs? You worked out there?
Yeah, well, I worked in production, which is, and drilling. But I worked production before I went to drilling. And I would be on either a platform that was mounted on a jacket and set to the seafloor, or I worked on floaters that were like ships or semi-submersibles or PLPs. I mean, 20 years offshore, I got to see a lot of stuff. And I enjoyed every
day.
I enjoyed it all. But after a while, it got to be like, wow, things are changing. And I went out there. My first job offshore was in 92, and I got hurt. Seems like, I guess, that was welcome to the oil field. And so I got laid off, went back to work in the refineries and chemical plants, and then was in an explosion there in Houston area in 1999. And I thought to myself, I was near death when that happened. I was very lucky I even didn't get a scratch. But there was an explosion, and I said, I ain't going to work in this industry anymore. I want to go back offshore where it's...
Right.
So I went back offshore in 2000 and worked offshore until like 2015 and enjoyed it. Went all over the world. Primarily stayed stateside, but while I was in the drilling industry for 3 or 4 years, that's where I went all over the world. I enjoyed the travel. I got to see stuff, and you only see, like you just said a while ago, in the movies or in books and magazines and TV, you know.
Yeah.
The sights, the sounds, the smells. It's just once in a lifetime.
When you worked off, like when you say offshore, and you said you was on something that was either hooked to the sea floor or it was a floater, that isn't a type of job where you go in at 9 and leave at 5.
No.
Like, you had to stay out there for X amount of time. And then how long would you stay out there for a period?
Usually 30 days, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 30 days. But the longest I was ever gone was 6 weeks. And the company I'd worked for sent me and another guy to Africa, where we went to the country of Namibia, and we were going to be there for a 2-week survey, and ended up having to ride the ship across the Atlantic Ocean. So that took another 4 weeks, and we still didn't even get to the States. We made it to an island called Curacao, which was north of Venezuela, and we stayed a day or two there, and then got on an airplane and flew back to New Orleans, and then I went home. I had 10 days off, and then got sent right back out in the Gulf of Mexico for another 30 days.
Wow.
Busy, busy, busy at that time. I was making more money than I could throw a stick at. Was knee-deep in my horses. Yeah. I had... You know, while I worked offshore for those 20 years, I had worked a 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off schedule. So normally on my days off, I was out showing horses.
Yeah.
Loved it. And got hooked on them really deep and bad. But
So you have you only shown cutters, or you just do that recently?
No.
Or have you always just been in horses?
I started out in team penning back in the 90s.
And oh,
cool. Me and some buddies got good at it, kind of like when team penning was kind of just breaking out, I guess. And
you don't hear much team penning anymore. Maybe I'm just not around it. I don't know.
Well, it's still big. You know, it's more sorting over team penning, but it's big and popular. But, you know, once you leave that world and you go to the big dollar horses like reiners, cutters, and cow horses, team penning just don't fly. You got to be able to ride a horse, not just be able to sit on one that's, you know, going left, going right, sometimes to make a circle and you didn't tell it to, because them penning horses, I learned my lesson about penning horses. You blow them up. Because, you know, you're fighting the clock. And I don't care. I'll argue this to the grave. I don't care what anyone tells me, that team penning is something that is better than riding a finished reiner or a finished cutter or even a cow horse. Because penning, you're two-handing, and you're up against the clock, fastest time wins. So that horse, all it has to be able to do is stop and turn. Stop and turn. You know, I mean, he's got to chase across the pen. But you're two-handing that horse. I don't ever see anybody one-hand a horse in team penning, very rarely.
Right.
But I haven't been to a penning since I got away from penning back in the 90s. But, you know, you see it on Facebook and stuff like that. And there's people that love team penning. More power to them. It's great. It's fantastic. That's where I got started. won a belt buckle, won some money. But then it was like, it's a challenge. What's challenging me next? Well, I found cow horse.
Fell in love.
I did. I went buck wild and fell in love with cow horse.
I
bought one. Took lessons. Got converted from being a fenner to a reined cow horse guy. And paid my dues, worked my butt off. Started showing hot and heavy in the NRCHA. And the local affiliate, the Southwest Reined Cow Horse Association, and AQHA. And I could hold my own pretty much, you know. At the bigger shows, I might have been more challenged because of the variety of the good riders. But, man, at AQHA level, there were good riders back when I was doing it. You could go to a reined cow horse show practically 2 weekends out of every month, and you could go all over Texas and Oklahoma and Louisiana. But that started getting harder to do. I got to meet some of the best trainers in the business and ride with them and took lessons and clinics. And my riding kept improving, and I on the AQHA record books, I had a gilding that I showed 100 times under the judges and qualified for the World Show 1 year in 2007 for working cow horse. And I regret that I didn't go, but even back then in 07, I think it was going to cost around $3,000 just to go show at the World Show.
Oh, wow.
For AQHA.
Yeah. And so now
I quit showing cow horses and started showing reiners. And I had gotten lucky and stumbled into a deal with a cutting horse trainer that had a cow horse for sale. And he was right there in Brenham, Texas, which is the second capital of the world for cutters, Fort Worth being the first, Brenham second. He talked me into looking at him, and I wasn't in the market at the time. But I looked at him. This was an 8-year-old stallion, bred fantastic for that time. And I said, well, you know, my ex-wife at that time was taking cutting lessons from him. But at that time, I was like, yeah, I'm not really interested. So I come back out there with her to watch her take a lesson. He goes, hey, why don't you saddle up that stud horse and ride him around? Excuse me. So I did it, and I rode him around, and, man, he had the prettiest little lope. He could catch leads with no problem, left side, right side, and he'd stop on a dime and give me a nickel back.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, wow, this is a cool little horse. And he's still a stallion, and he was well-behaved. Wow, that's pretty neat, but I don't know about buying him. He goes, well, you really ought to give him a shot. Well, again, I'm not in the market, but third time, I went with my wife. She goes, saddle up that horse. I'm going to let you ride him on cattle. After that, I bought it. I got him cheaper than what he was asking for it. And I went and started showing that horse. And I was showing him in the reined cow horse. And everybody was oohing and aahing about him. And one time at a show in San Antonio, I entered the jackpot cutting on him, and I think I wound up getting fourth place. And I had a lot of people just saying, man, that is the neatest horse, blah, blah, blah. And I was real proud of him and proud of myself for finishing fourth place in a jackpot cutting. And one of the trainers that came up to me and was kind of patting me on the back was old Chris Dawson. And he said, that is a really neat little horse. I bet you're going to have a lot of fun with him. I said, that's my plan. Another guy, a trainer who I don't remember his name at this time, asked if I would sell him. I said, no, I just bought him. I need to enjoy him. He goes, well, if you want to sell him, I'm a buying. I was like, well, you know, how bad you need him in your trailer, that might be a different story. But yeah, I told my wife, if they pay me 40, they can have him. But of course, that was probably way overpriced. But, you know, that's how you test the water.
Yeah.
So if they got to have him, they'll pay what you want.
Right.
But anyway,
you still got him now?
I lost him to colic about 2017 or 2018. Right now, he'd probably be on his retirement if he was still alive. He would just be getting trail ridden. But
right.
I gelded him a few years later, and I let a girlfriend talk me into it, and I wished I'd have never done it because he wasn't a problem while he was a stallion. But I think she was jealous because her two stallions were nothing what I had. You know, that one was a paint horse and another one was a Palomino that really had done no accomplishments to my knowledge at that time. They were just...
Menards is the ultimate home improvement destination in the Midwest. Since 1958, we've been supplying you with everything from hardware to automotive needs. We believe in helping you save big money on every project, big or small. From top-of-the-line tools to plumbing supplies, paint, and appliances, we've got you covered. We thank you for making Menards a part of your year. From our family to yours, have a safe and happy new year.
Save big money at Menards.
Breeders. I think the paint was getting more for his color, which was black and white.
Right.
And the Palomino was just so... He was like Skipper W bred or something like that. And I was like, that's never really impressed me. But, you know, I was a cow horse guy. It had to have cow breeding in it, cutter cow horse. But, yeah, I showed Rainers for a little bit. On my cow horse, I was showing him in the raining. Because he could do all three. I did okay. I didn't. I never made to be a stud duck in the raining, but I enjoyed it. It was fun. And, you know, that horse was my once-in-a-lifetime horse. I could show him in the cutting, the raining, and the cow horse. And somebody had even told me that you need to start roping on that horse. And I went to a cow horse clinic in Wynnewood, Oklahoma, that was put on by Russell Dilday, Todd Crawford, and another guy that was a cutting horse trainer. And Todd and Russell knew the man that trained my horse. They all liked him, said he could put a horse together. And I wish that I have videos from that weekend in Oklahoma, but I really enjoyed that clinic. Those guys were so helpful.
Yeah.
And I finally, on that horse, I started learning how to ride him like he was meant to be rode, and I started doing really good in the cow horse shows. The reining shows, I would make a decent finish for my class, but I never did kill it. And then I started showing him in the cutting, and we accelerated in the cutting. So I think we kind of found our calling in the cutting. And at one time when we were both kind of fresh to cutting, the ACHA, which is the American Cutting Horse Association, and my little division or whatever area I'm in. But I was a top 10 rider in one class and a top 20 rider in another class. And I got to have my little moment of fame by that.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah, I love that horse to death. That horse, to me, could never do no wrong. And even if he did, I was proud to own that horse, and I was very proud to show him. So that's where I cut my teeth in the cutting. And since then, I bought two or three others.
Well, I was fixing to say, I mean, they say that you have one kind of heart horse throughout your whole life. You have one horse that just kind of, you click, and there's no other horse that can touch them. Like,
that was him. He was no taller than 14 hands.
Oh.
And I'm only 5'5", so we went together like peanut butter and jelly.
Oh.
And he was a talking horse. When you go in the barn and call his name, he would make them little funny giggle noises, and he was just truly my once-in-a-lifetime horse. My
right.
girlfriend at the time showed him in the reining at these little open shows, and took him on trail rides. Then I could go work cows on him and cut. And, I mean, that was the best do-it-all horse I ever owned.
Right.
And the ones I got now are a little more special, I guess, as far as I've taken them on trail rides, but I didn't do nothing like I did on that one horse. And I've got another one that he's 21 years old, and he's a Shining Spark grandson, and he's killed it in everything except for cutting and cow horse. He was a roping horse, from cow horse to roping horse, heading and heeling. And then he went to reining for a little while, and now he's just, I give riding lessons on him.
Because
he's a soldier. And he's about 15 hands, 21 years old. He's a red sorrel. Just never forgets anything he's ever been taught.
Yeah.
He can do anything you tell him to do. He's been certified for mounted patrol. You know, heading, healing, working cattle. I mean, it's just, they don't make them like that anymore.
Yeah.
And when they do you pay for them.
Do you think it's harder, which discipline do you think is harder to ride, period, and then which one do you think is harder to go from one to the other? Like, do you think it's hard to go from reining to cutting, or is it hard to go from cutting to just rein cow horse? Like, which one has been the most difficult or the easiest for you to kind of transition from?
Me and Bobby Lewis, I don't know if you know him or not. He's a high-dollar, top-dollar type trainer from Oklahoma. And he's been around since the early days, worked for Carol Rose. Me and him were eating breakfast one time at a hotel, and I asked him that same question, which one's your hardest event on horses? And this man has done everything from halter to cutting.
Yeah.
And his specialty is rope horses, but he told me, he goes, it's the working cow horse. And I said, you know, I agree. That's the hardest one out of all the performance horses to learn. Because you're going to do dry work, which is your reining. So you got to be able to kill it.
Right.
You know, lead changes, circles, rundowns, spins. And then when it comes to working a cow, holding him up on the fence, and getting you some turns and judging how much gas is left in that cow to take it down the fence and get those two required turns. And then still have enough horsepower to get out there and circle up each direction. Cow horse is demanding. And it's I think by far the hardest discipline out there. Roping would probably be pretty good, but I transitioned real well from cow horse to cutting.
Okay.
And,
that's what I
like
was thinking.
It. It was a good transition.
Yeah, I was thinking that it was probably easier to go into roping from something cow horse related versus reining that doesn't necessarily have any cows in it, or, you know, for you to have that leg up probably helped you a little bit.
Yeah, and you know, with all the trainers I've shown under, Bob Avila, all those big guys, and then the one guy out of Brenham that really got my teeth going and teaching me how to cut, I just enjoyed them all, and I enjoyed everything. I was hungry for it and wanted to be a good one. I didn't want to be a nobody. I wanted to be somebody. You know, I wanted
right.
to be the guy that when he pulled up in the parking lot, people go, crap.
Right.
You know, that they weren't going to have an easy day. But I never really took it so serious that I mean, I was hard on myself, and I made a lot of mistakes. Don't get me wrong. But that year I qualified for the world, Robbie Boyce was my coach, and he got me to slow it all down and tune it up. Because I remember crying to him one day, man, there's a guy that's way older than me, and when we go to San Antonio, that guy beats me every time, and I just can't have it. I wanted to beat this man so bad. And he had transitioned from reiners to cow horse. And I just, from all the years I showed against him, we became friends, but it just blew me away at, he kind of looked unorthodox when he did it, but, you know, he just never made out any mistakes.
Right.
So he was winning a lot. Well, me, I made the nickel and dime mistakes that on a scorecard took you out of the placing or lowered my placing. But in 07, under Robbie Boyce, I got all that cleaned up and qualified for the world, so... I remember my biggest victory was back in that time frame they used to have 4-day shows, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, or Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And AQHA doesn't do those anymore, and they haven't done them for a long, long time.
Wow.
But I could show up. They took a lot out of people. It just got to be too big or something like that, you know, and it also, they had that rule where two shows can be running at the same time or within a certain mileage of each other. It's kind of a screwed up deal, but we got over it. But I won 3 out of 4 days at that horse show. I won, and the one day I didn't win, I finished second. So I was the circuit championship in the cow horse. And I'll never forget that guy that I wanted to beat. We had a good sit-down talk in the bleachers. He says, you sure did clean up your stuff. And it showed. And we both chuckled and laughed, and I said, yeah, well, I've been aiming for you, and I finally beat you. He goes, you did. You really did. I think he was prouder of me than I was of myself.
You know, that's cool that happened, though, because, like, you know, horses, I don't think people realize just how humbling horses can be and then how amazing it can make you feel. Like, you know, like you sitting here talking about how you made it your goal to not just beat this guy and make it sound like that, but to improve yourself enough to where you can place above him. And the fact that he, you know, respected you for that and you got to that point speaks a lot. I mean, like, Mm-hmm. It takes a lot to do that.
Well, and cow horse ain't for sissies.
Yeah.
And cutting is more dialed in, and you really, you know, in the reiners, you got to be mounted. And in today's world, even an amateur better have at least a $30,000 horse, and then a super non-pro better have a $50,000 to $80,000 horse, and some people probably got $100,000 horses that are non-pros, but cutting, kind of the same way. You know, you can start out in that $1,000 rider up to a $3,000 rider on some older horses that'll get you schooled and get you warmed up, and you're going to keep graduating, you know?
Yeah.
And I've had a lot of people come to me, what's it going to take for me to get over there? And I said, well, you're not going to do it on the horse you have, and I don't mean to sound ugly or rude, but I've had so many people want to say that, you know, I want to do cow horse, and I want to do reining and roping or cutting. Well, let's be honest, what's in your budget? And if this Mustang ain't going to do it, you're going to have to go get a real horse.
Right.
And I may sound prejudiced. Your listeners might say, God dang, who is this guy? Mm. Well, I'm a performance horse fanatic. And there's a place for every horse. You don't take a damn, you don't see 14 and 15 hand horses at the Olympics doing dressage.
Right.
And you don't.
No,
and
you're preaching to the choir. Look, I've already said this many a times. Like, you don't. You can't take a cutting horse and do dressage like you just said. You can't take a dressage horse and turn around and try to rein with it. Like, they're bred and made the way that they are to do certain things. Some people don't comprehend that.
Well, and I know a young lady that she's aspiring to have a horse business where she sells horses, and there's a guy that we're mutual friends with on Facebook. I'm not going to say names. But he was letting people know that he needed a turnback horse. Well, this young lady dropped three horses she had for sale on his Facebook post. And my eyes rolled back in my head. And I was like, I don't think this girl knows what a turnback horse is.
Right.
And the stuff that she posted pictures of would probably run the opposite way when they look at a cow. So my point being is that these people that are trying to do some stuff, but they're just going about it in the whole wrong manner.
Yeah.
When I wanted to ride a cow horse, I went to some of the shows before I ever bought a cow horse and watched and learned and talked and asked. Then I bought my cow horse. Then I went, took lessons and started showing. And I would do the same thing. Excuse me. If I wanted to do anything else. I mean, the only thing I haven't done per se that I do want to do is go roping. I just want to rope good enough so that when I have to go work cows with somebody, or even just to go fart around on a weekend and go rope, I want to be able to catch whether it's the front or the back.
Mm-hmm.
And just be solid.
Yeah.
I haven't shown a cutting horse, let alone my own, since last summer. And I think last summer I went two or three times. And I beat myself over this because I've got some of these really nice bred, nice trained horses. And they're just sitting out in the pasture eating grass and getting fat. But, you know, we moved up to a bigger place. And it was a cow place, not a horse place. So we've had to convert it from cattle to horses. And we got the hot shot business kind of gets priority when somebody needs something, because that gives money to build a wash rack or this or that at the house. I get more pleasure out of showing and being around my buddies that weekend. And if I cashed a check, that's a bonus.
Right. Mm-hmm. Now, they say with roping, it's one thing to do it on the ground. It's a whole nother ball game once you get on a horse. Like, you could sit there and practice roping on the ground all you want,
mm-hmm.
but it's a whole nother different thing once you get on a horse and you're working with a moving object.
Yeah, well, what I'm seeing is now that they've invented these sleds that you pull behind a 4x4 or a side-by-side, and that's been a game changer in my head, because now they make them so that the cattle looks, or the dummy looks like he's loping.
Yeah.
His back leg kicking out, you know, so that's a whole new ball game. So, man, it's like I need to get me one of them sleds and start doing that. Yeah, well, I've got a professional reining horse trainer that lives right down the road, and he's already called. Man, we're doing the same thing, so why don't you just come learn with us? I'm like, great, because you got a covered arena, and I don't. Yeah, that was my invitation right there to bring some horses over to ride. But I just look forward to doing all this, and I just I feel like I'm going to get older before I get anything done that I really want to do. And I'm just like, man, I want to hurry up and retire so I can play.
Right. But, yeah. Well, they say time flies when you're having fun, so.
Well, I'm not having fun working, but it's paying the bills. And I got the skills, but, man, I really want to be on my horses so bad. And
yeah.
I love teaching people how to ride better. I guess a pet peeve of mine is watching poor horsemanship. It's like dragging.
Well, wait a second. I was going to ask you about that. You had mentioned earlier in the conversation. You do the transport and the hauling, and then you have your regular normal day job, and then you've shown, you know, different disciplines and stuff. But you mentioned that you do give lessons. So do you give lessons just to any Joe Blow off the road that's never had a horse, or do you give only lessons to people that have been riding?
It's been a little bit of both, but I prefer to give lessons to somebody that has some kind of riding experience.
Yeah.
It's a big no-no in the organization. I'm not going to say I'm not, but to take money for lessons means you're a pro, or they consider you a pro and you have to show in the open classes. But I need to charge something. I could do it for free, and I'd gladly do it, but I need stuff bought around the house to justify owning horses, you know, like stall improvements and sand for the arenas. And if I got two or three people that want to come take some riding lessons, I'll damn sure charge them $50. That's it. I don't go over that much. I figure an hour of my time to teach somebody some of the skill sets that I pay money to learn is nothing. I mean, I'd gladly teach it for free, but I just think, you know, hell, $50 will take me and the girlfriend out for dinner, you know, and I figure I'm helping somebody that needs help. And I don't sugarcoat it. I guess you could say I'm kind of like Clinton Anderson. You know, you got to have a horse that you can work with. I've tried to coach people that had stuff that just don't want it to be what they want them to be. Then I've got the people that had some horses that could do a bunch, but they just needed to polish it up. I've had people come to me that claim to be horse trainers, and I'm blown away by what they don't know that you should know as a horse trainer.
Right.
And they've came and take, or they've come over and taken a lesson, and I'm just blown away by what's not known. And I'll say, what did you do? So I'll take them down a notch. I might be changing the subject kind of, but I'm like, let's just do some basics here. Put a snaffle bit in that horse's mouth and two hands. Let's see what you don't know, because I don't like what I see when you're in a bridle. And they don't even know the difference between bridles and bits. And I get so aggravated and disgusted. And I try to really work with them, but I've seen a couple of people get on up there and step it up, and they do okay. And then I've had some that I kind of discouraged to just, you know, maybe you need to go look at this type of deal here. Go to this person. They might be better suited for you. I've never had anybody outright to my face say that I suck. They might be doing it behind my back to other people, but word to me has never gotten back that I don't know what I'm doing or that I'm not able to teach. Maybe I don't teach as effective or as good as somebody else, but I really try to make my point clear on how to get something done with a horse, whether it's lead changes or a departure. You know, a lot of this ranch horse classes, that is so popular.
Yeah.
And then these people can come in there with some horses that they can walk, trot, and lope. Maybe they can't do flying lead changes, but we'll get there if the horse and the rider can come together. You know, there's just so many aspects of showing horses. I showed horses for hot and heavy for 15 years.
Yeah.
In three or four disciplines. And I never say I mastered it and I got better at one over the other, because my interest was all over the place. I liked it all. And I just wanted to be good at all of it, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I have a jack of all trades, master of none, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But these people that have come to me for help and lessons and said that they are trainers, and then they show me what they got inside my arena at my house, and I'm like, where did you get the nerve to say that you're a trainer? What are y'all training? And my girlfriend will lose it with me over that stuff. You know, and if she hears this podcast, I probably won't need to say what I need to say, but we've had some heated discussions about it.
Yeah.
And it's like, man, quit trying to be something that you're not, and quit lying to people saying that you are.
Right.
And my girlfriend will say that, well, who are you to say that they're not that? And I said, if Ray Charles could see them, what do you think I can see? And I use that.
It's hard to regulate the horse industry.
It is. You can't regulate the horse, that industry. You can't regulate it.
Right. You know, it's like, you know, doctors have licenses and they have boards that they have to report to, and they have things of that nature. Dentists have the same thing. You know, lawyers have that kind of same thing. The bar and stuff of that nature. With horses, it's just kind of like, you literally can have a Joe Blow down the road go, okay, well, I'm a horse trainer. Give me your horse and give me your money. And you have no way to really kind of.
If you don't know what you're looking at, how do you gauge it?
Exactly. You really have no way to try to figure it out and make sure that you are dealing with somebody that's good or is a trainer or does know what they're doing, you know.
Well, I've had a couple of people come to me. And, I'm a horse trainer, but I need help doing this or that. And I'm thinking to myself, well, it's either going to be something in particular or two or three little things that maybe I can help them with, or they just don't know what in the cornbread hell they're doing in the get-go, and then it gets worse from there. But everybody starts somewhere, and I know that. I was
right.
The same way 30-plus years ago. And some people's budget is limited, and I get all that. I understand
right.
It. We all come from some background of some sort, good or bad, and it is what it is.
Well,
and
I mean, it's like you can agree with this, you know. We grew up in a time where when I was showing, you didn't get a participation ribbon. You got told the truth. So either you went home and cried about it, or you went home and fixed it. And you're not going to improve in life, period. Horses, no matter what it is, you're not going to improve in nothing if you can't get told the truth. You know, now there are certain ways to do that and things of that nature. I get that. But, like, you know, I mean.
Yeah. And these people that do these little weekend play days, and they might have somebody show up that has a horse that can do things on the correct lead, the left or the right. That person may even know how to get a departure and keep the correct lead going on a pattern, where this other person struggles to get their horse to even leave in a four stride in the correct lead.
Right.
I tell the people, read the rule book. And if you don't understand what the rule book is, I got every rule book out there from NRCHA, NCHA, AQHA, NRHA. We'll open it up and read it and try to figure it out in a way that you can understand it.
Yeah. Now, when you were younger, were you around horses at all when you were younger? What age did you get around them?
Well, when I was a senior in high school, I rodeoed, and I rode bulls and bareback horses.
Oh, cool.
And I did that for a little while after high school. But I got beat up real bad one time. And the next, like on the weekend, I went and rodeoed, and I got hurt. I got bucked off a bareback horse, and that horse stomped right across my head, just grazed me, but it opened me up, so I had to have stitches. And I couldn't really wear my hard hat that good the next week at work, and they told me either I needed to rodeo or I needed to work. Can't do both. And that kind of pissed me off, but fact of the matter was, it says, well, I'm not cashing any checks rodeoing, so I just started working. Man, I tell you, I think the Taylor Sheridan, when he did, I've watched a lot of his movies, and I think that guy probably never sleeps. I don't know what he lives on, but when he made Yellowstone, that just changed everything. And he... displayed and injected reining, cow, horse, and cutting, and now you got this Run for the Million that went from reiners, now it's back up and giving it to the reiners, the cutters, and the cow horse people. And word on the street, the roping's coming.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and the heading and the healing. I don't know about calf roping, but I put a post out there on Facebook one time tipping a hat to Taylor Sheridan, and somebody forwarded my post to Nicole Sheridan, which is Taylor's wife, and she wrote back, like, that's fantastic, and I was basically just saying that God bless Taylor Sheridan for making the horse industry come alive, because it was kind of dead, in my view. I mean, it was still going on, but not to the level you see it now. it just kind of went to a lull. But man, I've never got to meet Taylor Sheridan. I was hoping that I would. If I can get back to showing my cutters, I probably will make it to his place up there in Weatherford and show, because he's got an air-conditioned arena. And it, between myself and my girlfriend, we're both in our 60s, and it's a lot of effort to keep on top of everything.
Yeah.
Plus work and a day job. I'm 2 hours away from my house making a living. So I stay in an RV during the week and go home over the weekend. You know, how great can that be? You might drink a few whiskeys
of
beer.
I had a Lakota, and that thing was easy as hell to deal with.
Yeah, I've seen it all. You know, we've hauled horses for some celebrities and other animals, and one of the recent celebrities was a professional football player.
Oh, cool.
I think he played for the Seahawks, and he lives about an hour away from us, and he was all over my girlfriend about being going on trail rides. He bought his first horse.
Yeah.
And he bought a Friesian. And, you know, you can trail ride on anything, I guess, at the end of the day. But the horse is stabled at a really nice facility near his house. But I think he got talked into buying this Friesian by the trainer. And his goal was to go trail riding. And I thought, oh, why did you buy a Friesian? I mean, nothing wrong with the Friesian, don't get me wrong, but could have bought a lot cheaper horse, because he flew that horse in from Poland, I think. And, you know, my girlfriend could have got him a nice trail ride horse for $5,000 and got him a new trailer for probably what this Friesian cost, and he could have been going on trail rides with my girlfriend.
Right.
It's just amazing.
He probably spent a lot of money to have a horse flown in from Poland.
Yeah, I never got a dollar figure, nor did we ask. We just don't
right.
do those type of things.
Yeah, that's a little
You
rude.
Can just imagine, it was a pretty penny.
Yeah.
Anytime you
yeah,
put
I
an
can,
animal
I can imagine.
In an airplane, not going to be cheap.
Mm-mm. Well, I have thoroughly enjoyed learning about your history in the horse world and all of the cool things that you have talked about. So I really appreciate you doing this.